When Stephen Wolfram was just 17, he dropped out of college. By the time he was 21, he had a PhD in physics, and he was one of the first recipients of a MacArthur Genius Award. Well, today, he designs widely used software for mathematicians and scientists, but he is also an obsessive self-tracker with what is likely the largest personal data set in the world. Steve Paulson asked him about it.
Lots of people are keeping life logs these days, but you have been accumulating a massive data set about yourself for decades. Can you take me back to the 1980s and why you started doing this?
Oh, it's easy to collect data, and I've been interested in data, and so I just started collecting it. And each different type of data, I had a different reason to want to collect. Like, I collect my keystroke logs of every key that I type on a computer because one day I lost some stuff that I was doing on a computer when the computer crashed, and I figured, let's not do that again. Let's just record everything that I type, and that way I can always reconstruct what I did. But then I managed to keep the systems running well enough that I now have kind of 25 years of data about lots of kinds of things about myself.
So give me just a brief rundown of some of the different kinds of things you're collecting right now.
Oh, gosh, let's see. Well, I mean, right now, I just, like 3 or 4 months ago, I started collecting continuous heart rate data because it got easy enough to just wear a watch that collects heart rate data and, you know, skin temperature and all kinds of other things like that. I don't yet know what that stuff means. I probably could figure out whether I'm having a good time or not on this interview so far by looking at all of that, but I don't yet know how to interpret it.
Okay. What else are you collecting?
Let's see. On my computer screen, I capture an image of the screen every 15 seconds or so. So I can get kind of a time-lapse video of what I do all day, which is actually it's shockingly boring to watch. Then I guess I get everything to do with email, you know, all my meeting calendar stuff correlated with email. I guess I just, I happened to go on some trip to the opposite side of the earth a couple of weeks ago with a couple of my kids. And I was sort of interested in the jet lag problem. And so I said, OK, I'll try and collect in detail data about myself and the jet lag that I did or didn't have. You know, I've been collecting for ages. When do I go to sleep? When do I wake up? But a little bit more data around that. And hopefully from that, it'll be possible to understand, given also some of the external data that we have about, you know, when did the sun come up? How bright was it that day? Be able to figure out something interesting about what causes or ameliorates jet lag and so on.
So you're collecting just massive amounts of data about yourself and about your surroundings, and I assume you analyze this data in some way. What have you learned about yourself?
Look, I wouldn't collect this data if it wasn't easy to do. These systems, they just sit, they collect the data. If I have to think hard about them, it isn't going to happen. I suppose when I first started looking at this data, maybe 15 years ago or so now, and I learned a few things about sort of the way that was most efficient for me to work, to process email every day and so on. I also learned things about trying to figure out when do I have new ideas about things. You know, when I'm designing software and so on, there comes a moment when I've invented some term for something and I can go back and look. When did I first use that term? How does it grow from there?
I mean, I could imagine that the one point of this would just be you want to learn about yourself. You want to kind of get a picture of who you are. And then another reason would be you want to sort of change your behavior. I mean, you want to do things more efficiently, better somehow because of what you learn.
Yes. You know, I think the best thing for that is that I get feedback every day about sort of what I did the last day. You know, how many keystrokes did I type? How many steps did I walk? Those kinds of things. And I do get a pretty decent sense of, oh, what things really, you know, send me into unproductivity and what don't.
So the more keystrokes, the more productive then?
Typically, yes. So I've tried to organize my life so I don't do too many things where I have to put work in, but it isn't productive.
Yeah.
When there are keystrokes, something is being created. That's usually the principle for me, at least, I'm happy to say.
This is fascinating. I mean, basically, you're saying you can look at your behavioral patterns and you can figure out when you are most creative, when you come up with your best ideas, and presumably you can kind of organize your behavior to maximize those peak moments.
Yeah, yeah. What's been important to me is when the data is easy enough to sort of analyze, and I've built quite a few tools to analyze this data, then when you have a specific question, it actually makes sense to go analyze that question. Like, you know, I get a new computer keyboard. I ask, is it faster or slower to type on my new computer keyboard? Well, if that was going to take me more than 5 minutes to answer, I probably wouldn't bother. If I have tools set up so that it only takes me 5 minutes to answer that, I'm going to end up with my better keyboard that's, you know, 3% faster to type on or something. The main thing that I've learned is, first of all, it's like collect all the data. Don't put too much effort into collecting the data, because if you put a lot of effort, you know, you'll stop doing it after a while. Then the other thing is you've got to have tools to analyze things that are efficient enough that when you have a question about yourself, for example, you can actually go and with reasonably modest effort get some answer to that question. One of the things I'd like to be able to do is, you know, how much of my responding to email could I replace with a bot?
Hmm.
One of the things that I sort of just started getting into is the question of, given all the data that I have on what I end up doing, how much of the what I end up doing is actually completely predictable? In other words, to what extent can I essentially have an algorithm that just does what I would do, so to speak? Which would be nice, because then I can do something different.
Right, yes. Well, by now, you must have one of the largest personal data sets ever collected, I'm guessing.
I think I probably do. Yeah, you know, it was funny because a couple of years ago, I wrote some stuff about this, and I kind of expected that people would come out and say, oh, you know, you think you've collected a lot of data, but that's nothing compared to what I've got. But nobody, you know, people said, well, I've got a small fraction of what you've got. And I have to say, I found it kind of shocking, because I, you know, one would think the person who's collected the most data in the world must be the nerdiest person out there. And that's not my self-image, at least.
It's fascinating to hear all the stuff that you do. And the picture that I'm getting is that you're just fascinated by this stuff. Partly it's things that you can do with this information. Part of it is just, this is your way of understanding the world. And also, more specifically, understanding yourself, who you are.
I don't know. It's one facet of that, at least. It's kind of interesting. It gives one a certain reality to one's impressions of oneself, where one can actually see this plot that shows, yes, I, you know, my impression is that I do this, but look, here's an actual curve, and I can tell from this curve that really is what I do. And sometimes one sees things where it's like, I didn't realize this is a, you know, a gradual thing that's changing over the course of years, but one can see it in the data, and when one thinks about it, yes, that's really what's happening. It's kind of like, can you get an automated historian that can pull out sort of interesting things, interesting kind of themes about what's going on?
So let me tell you one scenario that I can imagine in terms of how this data can be used to affect what we do in daily life. I mean, just as we subscribe to online music services that find new songs that match our tastes, we're going to have apps, I'm sure we already do to some degree, that tell us what books to read, what films to see, what restaurants to eat at, you know, all based on our likes and dislikes, which politicians to vote for. I mean, basically, we will become perfect consumers in all walks of life. Do you see this as our future?
Well, I think the real question is the future of people to follow what the auto-suggest systems of their computers tell them to do? I mean, in other words, right now, you go driving somewhere, you'll typically follow what your GPS tells you to do. You'll look for recommendations for things. You'll often follow what the recommendations say. One of the questions is, at what point do those recommendations get to be better than what any human can reasonably figure out about what one should do? And I think the answer is that will definitely happen. I mean, it's very easy for our computer systems to have much more information about our history, how we've responded to different things in the past, and so on, than we can readily think through with our brains.
But if we really do outsource all these choices to our machines, to algorithms, have we lost free will at that point?
Well, I think that's the interesting thing, that, you know, we have an artificial intelligence. I've spent lots of time building components of what's needed to make sort of a complete artificial intelligence, so to speak. But even if you have one of these things, it does not intrinsically have goals about what it's trying to do. You know, you can have this incredibly smart box sitting on your desk. You know, you can ask it questions and it can respond with sort of the wisdom, the best wisdom that can be achieved, so to speak. But with intelligence doesn't come goals. Goals are a sort of separate thing. And goals that humans have tend to be things that come from sort of the long history of culture and civilization and individual histories of individual humans and so on. Unless one's AI has essentially the exact same experiences that the human has and has the exact same constraints that the human has, there's no intrinsic sense of having goals in the ways that humans have them. You know, my view of where we're going with technology and automation and so on is, and it's really just a continuation of what's happened for a long time. The humans define the goals, the machines do the best they can to achieve those goals as efficiently as possible. And the goals that we can define are becoming more and more sophisticated, but still, just left to its own devices, the machine doesn't know what to do.
Now, it seems like one of your big projects, I mean, to look at various aspects of your company, for instance, is to democratize knowledge by making data, by making powerful computational technologies accessible pretty much to everyone. Is that a fair thing to say?
Oh, yeah. That's an exciting thing, that one can take what has been kind of knowledge and computation that's accessible only to experts and make it possible for anyone anywhere to be able to do that. I mean, it's kind of been a goal that I've had since I was a kid, actually, to see whether one could take sort of the knowledge that's been accumulated in our civilization and make it so that if there are questions that can in principle be answered on the basis of that knowledge, it becomes automatic and efficient to do that. You know, I wasn't sure in which decade one could actually build a practical system that would make that possible. Turned out it was, pretty much this decade. It's been great to be around at a time when sort of that transition is happening and to be able to make a system that does that.
Stephen Wolfram is a computer scientist and the CEO of Wolfram Research. Steve Olson talked with him.